فقال الله سبحانه وتعالى: أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، إن الله يحب المحسنين. فقد قال النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم: إن الله جميل يحب الجمال. In so far as Islamic art is concerned, we can speak of Islamic art as a primary form of communication of the Islamic message. In fact, Islamic art can speak more profoundly and clearly than even the written word. And it is wiser, I think, for Muslims in this day and age to show and not to tell. We should avoid preaching and claiming or proclaiming. Rather, we should show certainly in our deeds, for the teachings of our faith, but also in our beautifying of ourselves and the world around us. And this is because art speaks more profoundly and clearly than any word. A picture is worth a thousand words. Allah declares in the Holy Quran that وَمَا جَزَاءُ الْإِحْسَانِ إِلَّا الْإِحْسَانِ, that what is the reward for beautiful excellence except beautiful excellence? In other words, in the hereafter. Ihsan is perfection, it's excellence, but ultimately underpinned by beauty or an aspiration to beauty. Whether that is beauty in one's character, beauty in one's devotion, beauty in the ordering of one's life or the world around, this is all squarely within the ambit of ihsan, excellence. إِنَّ اللَّهَ كَتَبَ الْإِحْسَانَ عَلَىٰ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ. Allah has certainly inscribed beauty or excellence in all things. When you do things, do them beautifully, do them excellently. In fact, Plato said that beauty is the splendor of the true. And this is a theme that we will explore today. Islamic art as a cogent expression and an articulate, superbly articulate way of communicating the Islamic message, but also of manifesting truth. Now, if we are asked to introduce Islam to an audience unfamiliar with religion or civilization, I would strongly not recommend giving them a translation of the Quran, especially not this society, nor a book of Islamic law, the Sharia, nor a book of theology, of Kalam, nor a book of Islamic philosophy, or any of the many popular books purporting to introduce Islam to the Western world. In my experience, I have discovered that recommending to them to listen to a beautifully untranslated recitation of the Quran in one of the Arabic maqams, the melodic modes of Quranic recitation, without a translation, or contemplating an illuminated Ottoman manuscript of the Quran in Thuluth calligraphy, or marveling at Fez's Qarawiyyin Masjid, or Isfahan's Sheikh Lutfullah, or Cairo's Ibn Tulun Masjids, or listening to the music of the poetry of Hafiz or Amir Khosrow or Ibn al-Farid, this will certainly be a more direct form of communicating Islam's message, a more tangible form of communicating what otherwise is just a nice idea. Now, these masterpieces of Islamic civilization are superbly adequate in communicating the beauty of the message of Islam, and it has a profound directness that is unmatched by any number of articles or books about Islam. In fact, we find that despite the dissemination of all the types of propaganda against Islam in the West, virulent propaganda, many people from Western societies queue for hours to admire the architecture of, anyone knows, the most popular tourist destination in Europe, the Alhambra in Spain, and even the Taj Mahal in India. And if you look at the exhibitions of Islamic calligraphy and miniature paintings, and you look at the degree to which most of those are sold out attendances, or the sold out attendances at concerts of traditional Islamic music, and you find that these most tangible and outward manifestations of Islamic tradition represent a very subtle and inward exploration of the essential realities of Islam. And this is something that humanity, irrespective of his degree of education or lack thereof, is sensitive to. We are all sensitive to beauty. So it seems better to show Islam than to tell people about Islam. So you could say that silent theology of Islam, as expressed through its art, speaks more profoundly and more clearly than any treatise on Islam. And if we are serious about disseminating this message of truth, about sharing this guidance that Allah has blessed us with others, then we need to recognize that beauty is far more persuasive and represents a far stronger argument than any polemic that we can deploy. The Quran was not really revealed as a set of rational proofs, but rather the Quran is a recitation of unmatched linguistic beauty. Allah chooses the word and recitation, a beautiful recitation, as the means through which He introduces Himself to humanity. And this beauty has inspired most of the early conversions to Islam. And as a consequence, it goes on to inspire thousands of generations of men and women across the world, and literally changes the course of human history. Before the first books of fiqh, of Islamic law, were ever written, before the first books of kalam, of Islamic theology, was ever written, the first generations of Muslims had developed masterpieces of Islamic art. So art even precedes the formalization of what we call the Islamic sciences. If you look at the architecture of the masjid in Kairouan in Tunisia, or the Qubbat al-Sakhr, the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem, these actually predate even those early treatises on law that we are now familiar with. The Islamic arts are essential. They are an intrinsic component of the Islamic tradition. Sadly, this is the one component of Islam that is most neglected in the Muslim world of today. There are very few Muslim communities that actually patronize the arts, while every pre-modern Islamic society were profound patrons of the arts. Muslims were artists. And this is a significant loss for insan. We brought beauty to the world. But it's particularly tragic for us as Muslims. The one feature that distinguished Islam from medieval Catholicism was the beauty of our art, the sheer beauty of it, the beauty of our gardens, the beauty of our masjids, the beauty of our script, the beauty of our poetry. The hadith says, إِنَّ اللَّهَ جَمِيلٌ يُحِبُّ الْجَمَالِ. Allah is beauty, and He loves beautification. He loves adornment. And Muslims were enthusiastic in becoming co-authors in Allah's wonder in the world around them. And that is authoring beauty. In everything they touched, in everything they did, there was ihsan, excellence, beauty, precision. Unlike Muslims of today, who tend to want to always cut corners, settling for, well, the least that is possibly acceptable. And this indifference to beauty, if Allah is beauty, Jamil, and if Allah loves Jamal, adornment and beautification, then it stands to reason that any indifference to beauty, any neglect of the arts, is tantamount to indifference to Allah Himself. So while there is a lot said about love of Allah in modern Muslim discourse and love of the Prophet, there is very little in the behavior of conduct, and particularly what is produced by the hands of Muslims, that actually validates that. If Allah is beautiful, then we would want to celebrate beauty. In Islam, the sense of beauty and of excellence, ihsan, which is at once aesthetic, ethical, intellectual, spiritual, all of these are encapsulated in the term ihsan. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحِبُّ الْمُحْسِنِينَ. And this term is repeated over and over and over in the Quran. Indeed, Allah loves the doers of beautiful good. Not just good, khayr, but muhsinin, the doers of beauty. The classic definition of ihsan comes from the hadith of Jibreel, wherein the Prophet of Allah is asked to describe what is Islam, what is iman, and what is ihsan, as a lesson to all of us. Islam, submission; iman, faith. But then the culmination of this journey, mal ihsan, what is excellence? Upon which the Prophet replies, an ta'bud Allah ka annaka tara, فَإِلَمْ تَكُنْ تَرَى فَإِنَّهُ يَرَى. And some of the muhaddithin say, فَإِلَمْ تَكُنْ تَرَى. If you are not, you shall certainly see. Now this noting of the self. In any event, going to the first part of that hadith, excellence is to worship Allah as if you see Him. And if you do not see him, then always to be aware of the fact that he sees you. Now, the Islamic arts cultivate ihsan. This ihsan that the Prophet is speaking about, this beauty, this excellence, this refinement of living, this grace. The Islamic arts actually cultivate this ihsan. And this is because the patterns on the traditional musalla, not this junk that you find mass-produced in Saudi Arabia, for example, but the traditional musalla or sajjada, if you look at the patterns, if you look at the geometric designs and the calligraphy ornamenting the classical Islamic masjid, or for that matter, the traditional Islamic home, the architecture of these homes and of these masjids, even the madrasas, just the architecture alone assists us to worship Allah كَأَنَّكَ تَرَى, as if we see Him. Muslims attempted to reflect this ihsan, worshipping Allah as if you see Him, by ensuring that everything they created, whether it was the homes they made, the goblets from which they drank, the books that they wrote, were infused with a profound sophistication and beauty and perfection, whereby the person who simply gazes at it will be one who is called back to remember Allah in His perfection of beauty. كَأَنَّكَ تَرَى. Because through these displays of beauty, we come to discover, well, the ultimate source of all beauty, namely Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah is beauty, يُحِبُّ الْجَمَالِ, and He loves this adornment. Why does Allah love us adorning? Because one, we are honored with participation in this divine prerogative of creating beauty. But also it becomes a conduit, a window through which we can begin to see the divine, or be led to Allah. And this Arabic word, for those who are more proficient in Arabic, كَأَنَّ, and تعبد الله كأن, as if, actually implies seeing through khayal, imagination. Now, imagination is something that Muslims have lost. Very few Muslims, in fact, I'm sure you may not have heard of a single bayan where the topic was imagination and the virtues of imagination. And that shows how far we are really from our heritage as creators of beauty, and from our imaginings, the outpouring of beauty in everything we do. So this hadith refers in ka'anna, engagement of the imaginative faculties, not just rational faculties. Because unlike pagan traditions, instead of representing something imaginary or unreal, imagination, khayal, is a creative and a perceptual faculty. And this clothes pure meanings or ideas, spiritual realities that are beyond the physical and sensorial. The imagination can actually clothe those spiritual ideas. It also perceives the meanings represented in sensible forms. It can take a sensible form and then through its imagining project it back to the divine. And this is the strength of imagination even over intellect or rationale. And that is why throughout the Quran we are called to imagine beyond the horizons of our physical universe. We are called even to the ghaib, the unseen, and the only thing that can penetrate that world beyond time and dimension and sensorial form is imagination. Now, imagination allows us to make the invisible world visible, but it also allows us to trace visible forms back to their invisible meanings and their purposes and their source, and that is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Everything we know of Allah in our hearts, not just the knowledge we have acquired, is through our imaginings. Everything we know of life and its meaning and purpose and our ultimate destiny is of our imagining. The imagination is like a barzakh. It separates two realities. When a person dies, he leaves this world or form and he enters into the interspace, the barzakh, before the world of absolute reality. And imagination is actually that barzakh. It separates two realities, but it also participates in both, like the barzakh participates in both. A barzakh between the visible and invisible worlds. Alamul shahada and alamul ghaib, that which we see and perceive and that which is beyond sensorial perception, even beyond intellectual comprehension. Between the worlds of matter and the world of spirit. Between sensory forms and intelligent meaning. It's the imagination that allows us to make that leap, not the mind. The mind can take you till the edge of the cliff, but the mind can never allow for you to jump. So while it's impossible to directly contemplate Allah, we know that, because Allah is beyond the comprehension of the mind and the terms of reference of rationale. And it's impossible to contemplate Him directly. As some ulama have described, it is like the foolish pursuit of wanting to know the sun by staring directly at it. It'll blind you. But Allah has signs, ayat. And that is why even the ayat of the Quran are called ayat. They are signs that allow us to contemplate, to meditate upon, to see aspects of the invisible, aspectless divine, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. They are the proverbial pieces of artwork that points or directs your attention back to the artist. And this is why the Quran is full of ayat, signs, milestones, pointing back. In fact, according to Abul Atahiyah's famous lines, وَفِي كُلِّ شَيْءٍ لَهُ آيَةٌ تَدُلُّ عَلَىٰ أَنَّهُ وَاحِدٌ, that in everything there is a sign which directs you back to your Lord, that He is certainly one and supreme. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala declares in Surah Fussilat, سَنُرِيهِمْ آيَاتِنَا فِي الْآفَاقِ وَفِي أَنفُسِهِمْ حَتَّى يَتَبَيَّنَ لَهُمْ أَنَّهُ الْحَقِّ أَوَلَمْ يَكْفِي بِرَبِّكَ أَنَّهُ عَلَىٰ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ شَهِيدٌ. And O insan, O humanity, we will certainly show you our signs on the horizon and also within yourselves until it becomes clear to you that this is certainly the truth. And in the context of imagination, it is through imagination that we can trace the signs of creation back to their origins and their meanings. And it is through imagination that we can interpret and understand them by recognizing the aspects of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that are manifest in creation. If we don't have imagination, that we are unable to make the leap of the barzakh between this world and its origin in Allah's presence. And it is from imagination that the artistic spirit is kindled. The fact that we are stripped of an artistic spirit as a Muslim community collectively, we no longer produce works of art, is indicative of the fact that we've lost imagination. We've lost the capacity to traverse this world to the next. We've lost the capacity to use this portal, this barzakh, into tracing back the signs to their original meanings or archetypes. And that is why Allah is always just a nice idea. And we love Allah about as much as we love a nice theorem or algorithm. The Islamic arts actually play an important role by bringing the basic elements of our surroundings. And if you look at Islamic art, this is the first thing that will strike you. Muslims were the first to actually introduce stained glass into architecture, because they use things like light and shade. We use very intelligently things like space and even time, color, scent, sensorial stimuli to discover meaning, Allah. We use sound and even silence in a very geometric way. Everything was proportional, everything was harmonious, everything was symmetrical. Everything in Islamic architecture, everything in Islamic art, everything in Islamic calligraphy, everything in Islamic poetry is symmetrical. And this is because of the geometry, which leads back to what they call archetypal realities, malakut. So, if we take any element of nature, once you break it down into its elemental forms, you find a very strict geometry. And this is the reason why Muslims were always obsessed with geometry, because it reflects the beauty and the wonderment of the divine in everything. Now, while this may be beyond the intellectual compass of many, what Muslims did in the past was reduce these very deep, profound concepts to basic geometrical shapes. And then they would tessellate it and multiply, indicating the infinity of Allah's wonder. And that is why Islamic art till today and its geometric pattern still has a resonance in the soul of anyone that looks at it. It harkens back to an ultimate original truth. You could say a basic substratum that substantiates all existence. In other words, Islamic arts make things metaphysically transparent. Islamic art allows us to perceive the light of Allah in those pieces of art and through those pieces of art, like a stained glass window. It has beautiful patterns, the light shines and projects the most beautiful colors, but we can also see through it and discover the source of all that wonderment and beauty and color and light. That is what Islamic art is. That is the philosophy that underpins it. We were not stupid worshippers. We were highly refined and cultured believers. And this was only developed through our artistic pursuits. Inna Allah يحب التحسين في كل شيء. Allah loves the beautiful doing of good in all things. فإذا ذبحتم فأحسنوا الذبح. So the Prophet of Allah said, so even when you slaughter, slaughter in the most beautiful way. And the ulama have explained why the Prophet of Allah uses the act of slaughter as an example of the doing of beauty. Because it may have been more sensible to use the example of a beautiful building, architecture, or a beautiful manuscript. But rather the Prophet of Allah doesn't use architecture or a reference to a beautiful garden, but slaughter, the most reprehensible and distasteful of all things to anyone. And what the Prophet was emphasizing is that if you could attain a degree of refinement and beauty to the point that even when you slaughter an animal, the most grotesque and distasteful of all things, there is beauty infused in everything you do, in elegance and grace, then it becomes far easier for you to express beauty in anything else you do. إِنَّ اللَّهُ يُحِبُّ التَّحْسِينَ لِكُلِّ شَيْءٍ. Allah wants us to be artists. In other words, authors of beauty. Like the example of the stained glass and the light and how it becomes a window through which we can even discover Allah, it is actually through khayal or imagination that the Islamic arts render the invisible divine visible. And it is through imagination that we can perceive the mysteries of the transcendent divine unity, Allah's oneness, that is immanent in all these sensory forms. There's multiplicity in the unity. But that seems to be a bit of a paradox. If there's unity, how can there be multiplicity? One cannot be many, many cannot be one. It is either one or the other. This is the difficulty between aql and khayal, what they call the intellect and the imagination. And Muslims have always been great imaginers. Those who believe in the unseen can do the impossible. And Muslims did the impossible. They literally changed the course of history. They conquered 2/3 of the civilized world. They introduced the world to the empirical sciences. They structure society in a way completely anew and most beautiful. And this is because of their imagination. Imagination is often contrasted with aql, reason. Where imagination is what we would refer to as ulama in the traditional Islamic sense as synthetic. And synthetic is to combine separate things to produce a complete whole. You synthesize different things into one whole. That's imagination. Only imagination allows synthesis. Aql, reason, is analytic. Reason is actually to separate a thing into its smaller components so as to better understand it. Reductionism is an example of reason. Imagination is actually both and. You can actually synthesize two seemingly contradictory things through imagination. Aql can't do that. Reason is either or. You're given one or the other. Where imagination draws connections and analogies, reason separates and draws distinction. And because as Muslims we've lost imagination and we've immersed ourselves in reason, there's always a fracturing within the Muslim world and there is sectarianism. That is why there's more sectarianism in the modern Muslim world than there ever has been in the Muslim past. Because we have lost the capacity to imagine, to synthesize. We've become analytic, sometimes very superficial, and as a consequence, we fracture. We have lost the artistic spirit and we've become robotic automatons. We consume, we no longer produce. And when we do, it is always in the most noxious way, without care to beauty or without attention to refinement and perfection. So inshallah, we'll continue with this. I feel it's a very important part of Islamic teaching, something that is sorely neglected. And I know very few ulama that actually even bother talking about Islamic art. May Allah give us better understanding. وآخر دعوانا أن الحمد لله رب العالمين.